to another episode of Mary and Andy Geek Out. We are taking a break, as we said in the last episode, from doing Teen Titans. So we were doing a nostalgia episode, and this was Mary's idea.
Specifically, what TV Tropes refers to as nostalgia. Stuff that was, like, very important to us when we were younger, but isn't really a shared experience.
I didn't even know that was a thing. I guess it was a thing for a lot of things.
Oh, TV Tropes comes up with a name for everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
So,
we're basically focusing on things that we really liked when we were growing up, but it seems like it's kind of not in the forefront of pop culture. Not even in the middle front, even. Not even like a cult thing. More of like, I guess it's more cult status, I'd guess.
Yeah, closer.
And not even like Rocky Horror cult.
Yeah, cult status would imply that it got more popular after its time.
Oh, that makes sense. All right, so not even a cult. It's just something that we really liked when we were young that hasn't seen much light since it first premiered.
Or in the case of mine, what light it has seen has been very unfortunate.
Should we do a brief thing? Should you tell yours? Should I tell mine? Then we can focus on yours first, Mary?
Or, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Mine is Magi Nation for the Game Boy Color. It's, should I go into it a little bit first?
Oh, I'll do mine next and then you can tell yours. Mine is, Give Yourself Goosebumps. It's the Choose Your Own Adventure spinoff. The Goosebumps series. Cool. Mary, let's start with yours.
Alright. So, Magi Nation originally was a card game from 2000. I don't know too much about it other than it was, you know, another monster series. You needed a card of a Magi from a specific place to be able to play the monsters from that certain place. And that's about as far as I know. There was some fiction that went along with it. They had, like, tournaments. And the fiction actually ties into the Game Boy Color game, which is the closest, I think, to the original narrative. And involves, like, this magical world. And there are people that live in, depending on where they come from, is the kind of magic they're attuned to. Like, I got a little bit into the stories that went along with the game when I was kind of obsessed with finding anything I could about this thing that nobody played. I mean, I think Wikipedia says it had a cult following, but I don't fully buy it. That, like, one of the examples was, like, this girl from the foresty area is fighting alongside a guy from the fire area, and he uses healing magic on her, and she's like, it felt so different from her own healing magic, and, you know, stuff like that, which, cool world building. The video game isn't so much that. It's your standard kid from our world, Tony Jones, ends up in a magical world, finds out he's the chosen one, and goes across the world to try to save the day. Now, it's a Game Boy Color game, but the graphics I was really impressed by back then. It was almost like Game Boy Advance. There was a lot of depth, a lot of color. Like, mostly I'm just comparing it to Pokemon at the time, which was pretty simple. And you go around and you get monsters and you train them. One of the mechanics involves you use your own health to summon the monsters, so the stronger they are, the more you're hurting yourself, which is kind of messed up, but,
you know, if I may, it's similar in Persona. There's one mechanic where you can deal a higher physical damage on the opponent at the cost of your own health.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's similar to that in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's unique for Mon series. The thing about Pokemon was it's super kid-friendly. Your Pokemon faint, they don't die.
Right.
Etc. Your monsters don't die either, you just resummon them.
Mm-hmm.
As many times as you like, you know, at the cost of your own health. So anyway, Tony Jones is this blonde American kid who's new in town, and he gets bullied into going into a cave, and that's how he falls into a magical world, as you do.
That's like Alice.
She wasn't so much bullied into a cave, but yes.
Oh,
blonde too. The character, he has a lot of character, which I think is one of the things that enamored me to this. He, like, has some snarky comment for everything, but he's not a jerk. He just has a lot to say.
Yeah, and, like, I should clarify, I've never played Imagination.
Magi Nation. It's Magi-Nation.
Yes, Magi Nation, but, like, I've been more growing more and more fond of those RPG games that has a very a very strong character that's not flat.
Yes.
That's because usually for those tropes, it's a character that you can easily fit yourself into the shoes of them. So for a series like Pokemon, I feel that honestly works. The flat character works in favor for it, because it's supposed to be everyone's character, everyone's protagonist. But in some cases, I feel having a strong character in RPG just makes it that more enjoyable.
Yes.
We've been
in an RPG especially, because you do want the characters to interact
right.
with each other.
Exactly. And for a series like... we've been playing Golf Story... we played it a month or two ago, and on the Switch, and that character is totally unlike any other protagonist you typically see in a video game. He's not so snarky. In fact, he's more passive. He's
kind of a dumbass.
He's a dumbass. But he has a lot of heart. He has a lot of humor to him. He's not full-on dumbass. I would say he also has a lot of observation of the world that I appreciate. So I can really respect that in a series when you have that kind of character development.
Yes. All right. Continuing on. Tony Jones is special because he can summon monsters from any part of the magical world, which ties into the Chosen One thing. One thing about the series is it gets really dark at points. There's, around the end of the game, there's a part where the final big boss is like, you know, you can just go home. And you can! And the game's over. That's, like, one of
the
possible
endings.
I mean, more or less, you didn't save the world. They don't show, like, how everything goes bad, or they don't say, like, yeah, you fucked up, go try again. It's just, that's the end of the game. Because it's one of those ones where, you know, you finish the game and once you get back into it, it just starts you from where you last saved. It's not like something where there's after-game content.
Right.
Except you do get to play through it again with your original monsters if you want, which is always fun.
Oh, nice.
Except by that point, I'd had enough of the story.
Right.
There's Team Rocket type characters, Korg and Zett, who, when I was little, they were the most hilarious things. Because Zett's the smart one, Korg's the dumb one, but he's in charge, so he ruins everything constantly. And then, near the end, when you're about to go into the cave to see the final boss, Korg falls off a bridge and dies, and Zett just kicks my ass, and it's awesome.
Wow.
Also, I think he has the best boss music. I cannot say for sure if the music's good. It's interesting for sure. It has a lot of wheedliness.
As you would for that time period.
That era.
For that particular handheld, yeah.
Some of it's very memorable. Some of it, like, I'd make lyrics up to, like, Incald, which is the fire area, you know, the volcano area. There was this music that goes, da 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 da. I guess we can play it.
Yeah. I'll just play it over your voice.
Yeah. What else?
What was your favorite monster?
Oh, yeah. The one I loved the most, just because I liked its design, it wasn't, like, particularly strong or anything, was something called Rudwat. And it's just, like, this little leafy lizardy guy. With a beak, I don't know. The art's kind of inconsistent. They have, like, the card art, which is done by one artist, and then in the fight there's, like, the pixel art, which looks a little different, which was a bit annoying. I like the card art for the Rudwat, so that's what I pictured him as. It's, like, this little six-legged lizard dragon-y dude. one of the funniest things, there's this really, really basic monster called, I think it was Shroomish. No, that's a Pokemon.
That's a Pokemon, yeah.
God damn it. It was a little mushroom. It was adorable. It's a Weeaboo. Wait, no? No? That's wrong, too.
That's totally wrong, yeah. Don't ask me, yeah. And you don't have internet, yeah.
True. Yeah. Anyway, it's this teeny mushroom whose name I forgot. He's the weakest monster.
Right.
But if you train him, which most people won't because he's super weak, he gets the strongest attack.
Nice.
In the entire game. It's kind of like a Magikarp Gyarados thing, but
yeah.
Your monsters don't evolve. The way you acquire them is when you defeat a monster in the wild, it drops what's called ammonite, some kind of crystal. And if you get a certain number of the right kinds, you bring it in and they turn it into a ring that you can use to summon it, which means you can have equipped 10 monsters at a time. But you can only have 4 in play.
One in each ring. Oh, okay.
Yeah, one on each
finger. Finger, excuse me. Got it.
Yeah, which
so
is...
So did you ever train the mushroom one?
No. There's... It also has, like, this bullshit side quest where you can get this titanic mushroom, but it's one of those ones where you have to follow a series of specific steps, and if you get to a point without getting that step, you can't do it for the rest of the game.
Wow.
You need a walkthrough. I have no idea how anyone figured this out.
Yeah.
There's, there are, quote-unquote, multiple endings. So there's, you know, the one where you just give up.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the one where... And then there's 2 different ones where you save the day.
Like a neutral and a true ending?
Kind of sad, bittersweet. You save the day, but this one guy who got, like, bad magic disease from touching the towers that only you can go into, dies.
Okay.
Or you can do this bullshit quest to save him. Now, why
is it bullshit? Okay.
I'll tell you why it's bullshit. You gotta go through a cutscene, and you end up in this prison that has no save points. So, if you go through that and don't find the thing you need to cure him, you're not going to cure him, because you can't go back to that place.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, so this was a fairly difficult game, by the sound of it.
It's pretty straightforward. You go through, you save the day. It's just if you want the best ending or the best monsters... It's a huge hassle. Well, okay. I told a lie. The strongest monsters, other than that giant, giant mushroom, is what they call Hirons, and there's one for each region, except for one they didn't program in because they ran out of time. But they're just basically these strong elemental dragon things, and they're pretty cool. They're very, you know, they don't drop ammonite as often. They're very strong and hard to beat, and they all look cool. What else was there? They said it gets dark. So if you plan on playing this, and I really would like you to, or at least to watch a walkthrough of somebody, because again, it's a Game Boy Color game, I'm going to say don't listen to this next bit.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'll put a little...
I'm giving you a gap. Okay.
Okay.
You're not the chosen one. You
Whoa.
Actually ruined everything by coming into the world.
What?
And you can save the day. You can fix your mistakes. But you were basically just like a bad omen.
Whoa. So it's similar-ish to Undertale. Well.
No, I don't. No.
No. Okay.
No. Nobody was calling the fallen child the chosen one.
Right.
Or any of the fallen children. But yeah, so that's cool.
That's nuts.
Yeah. Also, the final boss is just really freaky looking. He's got, like, blindfolded eyes, and he's really tall, like, taller than anyone else you fight.
You don't get that, really. You know, I think that's one of the first times I've heard of a... I'm pretty sure, I know it's been done before, but you're the chosen one, but wait, no, you're not, actually. Like, in the Lego movie, not a great example, but
no.
In the Lego movie, that was just a made-up prophecy.
Yes.
Well,
everything was made up in the Lego movie.
Yeah.
The villain was made up. What else? Oh, one of my favorite things about it is the exploration. Because, like I said, the graphics are amazing, so you're just, you know, exploring these sort of alien environments, and there's a whole bunch of secrets, and there's this one annoying glitch where you accidentally can meet a person before you've had the cutscene with them, but whatever. But it just was one of those things that gave me, like, weird dreams where I'd find something I'd never found before because the game just had so many weird little secrets. There's one thing, like, they have, like, the overworld map where you're traveling between lands without running into anything, and there's an area where if you go around this mountain a few times, you run into a big celestial whale monster.
Nice.
Yeah. The music's very haunting, if nothing else, mm-hmm. in certain places. Right. Now, so, this game came to me... I got really lucky. So, there was 2000-something, I don't know. The game came out in 2001, so I definitely was a teenager. I just can't remember what age. And I'm in... Long story, I'm in Kazakhstan... and my dad's like, I'm going to get you a bootleg Game Boy Color game for Christmas and birthday or something.
Is it an actual Game Boy Color game, though?
It is.
Okay.
Because I got the actual one later.
Ah.
After this one crapped out.
Got it.
But the thing was, I was like, I don't know what I want. Just give me Pokemon Pinball. And bless my father, he did not. He got me a actual cool Mon game.
Nice.
And it was great, but it was also during a time in my life when I was definitely hormonal, because I remember getting frustrated and throwing the cartridge across the room, which led to its demise.
So, wait, hold up. You were introduced to this when you were a teenager?
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay, I feel a little bit better about my pick then.
Yeah, yeah. No, we're adults. We can count teenage stuff as nostalgia.
Okay, cool.
As close as we are to that.
Right. All right, I thought you knew about this earlier, but that would make sense.
No, just think 2000, that would have been...
You would have been 9, though, or so at the time.
Oh, maybe I was 12. I don't know. Anyway.
Definitely on the cusp of...
Yeah. Womanhood.
Puberty,
yes.
If nothing else.
Yeah. Anyway, another thing about this game is it does the thing Pokemon does, which is it has an internal battery...
Mm-hmm.
Which might have accounted for why it had such great graphics, etc.
Right.
But that thing can run out, and you have to get it switched out like you do with
the Pokemon. Did that mean to have an internal clock?
No, I think it was something it might have been like a memory thing.
Hmm.
Just like it needed more power.
Gosh, I'm pretty happy how far we've come since. Because I remember...
Now I can swallow cartridges whole.
Not to like take away from your... Ew. It tastes bad.
Yeah.
Anyway, I remember when my Pokemon Silver game went out, I tried to replace the battery myself, and I accidentally broke the game. So in kind of like a funeral, I took it up to one of my favorite parks, and I just buried it in the woods somewhere, and it was like all rainy that day, and I had to go find a new one. And thankfully, there's a shop in our local town that replaces batteries in the old cartridges, which is pretty amazing.
Yes. No, now we're beyond that because we got, like, online stores to resell us those games.
Yeah. And then, well, it's... Yeah, and the flip side to that is that at least Pokemon Silver, Gold, and Crystal you can get on the 3DS eShop. But Magi Nation, at this time, as far as I'm aware, there's no... No one has resold it or re-released it. Really? Or?
I see it sometimes at the, secondhand shop.
No, I mean like...
Oh, yeah, it's not...
Like have it on sale on an online shop, for instance, or someone re-released it with modern graphics, things like that.
And they probably won't.
Yeah.
Weird thing, Magi Nation had a Japanese version where the main character was entirely different. I don't know how the gameplay was on that, but if you were a big fan of Tony Jones, you were not going to be a fan of the dumbass in the Japanese version. Smartass, dumbass. Magi Nation's interesting. They'd been trying to get a cartoon for it for years. And I'd kept up with that. I know at one point they were, like, going to do a computer animated one where the monsters could talk. They actually did come out with a cartoon. And it sucked. And it came along with this sort of very minimal MMO So you'd, like, pick a region, you train monsters from that region. Anyway, it didn't look good. The writing was, you know, standard mediocre child's one, like, you know, the kind where nobody had really, really cared that much.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're going to never speak of that again.
So for the interest of time, Mary and I talked before we recorded the episode what we wanted to focus on, and one of the things we want to talk about for our respective topics is why it isn't as popular as other similar games or things like it. So why do you think Magi Nation's not as popular as it is?
Well, the art of the cards that it was based on is pretty unappealing. It's like this weird sort of melted anime look.
Mm-hmm.
It's also like going up against Pokemon, which...
Yeah, there were... And it was... I remember that time period. That was... there. I mean, you have things like Monster Rancher, for instance.
Yeah.
There were a lot of Pokemon knockoffs and things like that that were jumping on that
It was
craze.
A crowded market.
Yeah. I mean, Digimon was... I mean... Speaking as a Digimon fan, there's hardly anything really related to Pokemon, but when you got that and Digimon and Pokemon taking up that market, it's much harder to make even something of your own name for itself when you got those two heavyweights there.
Yeah, and it wasn't offering anything unique. I mean, I thought it was very unique, but it, not nothing marketably unique,
yeah.
You know.
You lose your own health to...
Injure yourself for monsters! Yeah, if the cartoon had come out earlier, maybe it would have happened. Although, like I said, it wasn't a very good cartoon.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's about covers it. Totally watch a playthrough or something, because it's got an interesting story.
Yeah. Awesome. I guess I'll jump in for my thing, and maybe near the end of this episode... maybe we can talk more fluidly back and forth or have any last additional comments about our respective nostalgia wares. But, so I said before, my nostalgia is, give yourself goosebumps. Everyone knows goosebumps, especially if you're growing up in the 90s. They were the books to read if you wanted to find something that was a little bit more on the creepy horror side for something of your age. And I always liked them. What was funny was that I wasn't really aware of Give Yourself Goosebumps until later, because they came much later after the original series came out. And I ran into them when I was probably 12 or so, probably basically at the tail end of the demographic it was aiming for. And I remember it very clearly because I even wrote an article on my blog about this, but our local library, they used to have sales in book sales in October, and it was really amazing. I always remember the smell from the books in there. And I remember just, like, going through the aisles and looking through the books and the dim lighting in there. And that's when I saw, the Give Yourself Goosebumps. And the first one I saw was actually... The first book that I bought was actually the first book in the series of it, in the spinoff series. And that was Escape from the Carnival of Horrors. And... I think before I should talk about the individual book itself, I should talk about the whole series, because, like, I've read Choose Your Own Adventure books before this, but the Give Yourself Goosebumps series really, like, stepped up the difficulty, really made it more, I think one of the reasons why I found it so enticing was it was so, the horror that can come out of it, it seems more, what's the word I'm looking
for? Visceral?
Not visceral, but, like, it's existential.
Ah.
Like, I think when you place yourself in the situation at hand and an actual book of Give Yourself Goosebumps, you are faced with these choices that can very often lead you to a dead end, even if it seems logical. You have to think in those world's terms what would probably be the best situation. And usually, Give Yourself Goosebumps, you had high potential, I need to shorten this somehow, but there's high potential of reuse of reading through it again, because usually the first choice... Replay value. Usually the first choice you're given in the storyline will take you down two completely separate storylines. And a great example off the top of my head was the, I should have looked this up beforehand, but it was something called The Shocking World of Dr. Eek, or Egad. And the first choice would have taken you into this parallel mirror world. Very similar, now that I think about it, through Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass. The second choice, though, would have faced you more in line with Dr. Eek's inventions, particularly against robots. And so you have two completely different storylines that are jumping around through the book. So, of course, reading through it, you would have been very confused about what was going on. You would have to jump through it. And the way that I would usually do it was I would take a piece of paper, rip it up into many shreds, and I would put bookmarks along the way. And I wasn't a great choose-your-own-adventure reader, because I would always go through it, and when I get to a dead end, I'd go back to my last choice via the bookmark, read through that, and then keep going back and back until I've gone through all the different pathways.
I mean, it's just like saving before you make a choice in a game.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they don't expect you not to do that.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun, though. What's up?
In my experience, choose your own adventure games are just ludicrously unfair sometimes.
Yeah, and so these were pretty unfair too. I'll admit that.
Oh, it's also Goosebumps, which is not a fair world.
Yeah,
it's like Twilight Zone for kids.
And then the first one I mentioned, the Escape from Carnival of Horrors, they had a very... I remember this very well. They had a very... awful ending, and it wasn't an ending at all, in that you were forced into this wacky house with a hall of mirrors, and you had to find your way to escape. But if you chose wrong, you would be taken through an endless loop,
go back to page this and then back to the same page.
Yeah, you would loop back between two different pages.
Oh, that's...
And you
good
were just
use
stuck.
Of the medium.
Yeah, you were just stuck, and you would have to. You're done, and it's just one of the twisted best things about it. There are a lot of different books in the series, and I just started collecting them by. I don't want to say the dozens, but definitely I had quite a few of them, and my favorite ones from the series were the. Forgot what they called it exactly. It was like the deluxe series. It was the basic. It was because normally the Give Yourself Goosebump books were about the same size as regular Goosebumps, but the deluxe series were about twice the size. It felt almost like actual books, and these were the best ones because they almost played out like an actual video game in that you would collect items along the way. And you would have several different levels you would have to go and conquer, or areas you have to go through in order to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
I'll save my favorite one for last. But a good example of this is the is one that takes place on Halloween, of course. But basically, you were a trick or treater, and you went down a street, and there were five houses. Four of them were looked pretty similar, but they were just completely different colors. And the fifth one was this huge mansion, and like the main character, you said, okay, I'm going to save the big mansion for last, save the best for last. So you have to choose which of the colored houses you would go through. And when you would go in, you would have your own adventures, you would pick up the items and so forth, and when you're done...
Oh, that you need for the mansion.
That you need for the mansion. But what's great about this is that this was one of the last books in the series, and I'm pretty sure... Because I'm pretty sure it was like a ghostwriter pretending to be R.L. Stine. Like, he didn't actually... He might have written some of the books, but...
Just say ghostwriter thing.
Yeah. But anyway...
Yeah, I imagine a lot of R.L. Stine's stuff at this point isn't written by him.
Right. But they're still good. But anyway, there was a great... I think they were aware how some of the the readers would cheat. And they would say, oh, you're in this situation. Which item do you want to use to get yourself up? And there would be three items.
And ones you didn't show.
And
have.
One of them was an item you didn't actually pick up. And I was actually aware of this because like I said before, I used the bookmark method. And I would go through all four houses. And when I got to that place, I was like, I don't recall seeing an item like that. And I was so confused. And I turned the page and the page flat out called you out like, you didn't actually have this item, cheater. You're dead. And it's awesome. I love it so much. And I was like, oh, that's great. One of my other favorite... There's two... I think I'll talk about three others. One really briefly. One of them was you were in a greenhouse. Again... two separate completely choices in the beginning, but one of them was you get the items, which I was such a big fan of. Another one that's probably my second favorite is the one where you have to escape from a mall. And the first choice you make is a very by the books. You go through the mall, you're fighting they're not dummies, the models, the mannequins. You're fighting mannequins and things like that, and they're having big gargoyles, blah, blah, blah. It was okay. But the second choice was one where your friend, whose father owns the mall, dares you to collect an item from each of the different levels, and that was great, too. But my favorite one by far is, of course, speaking as the nerd scientist here, was the escape from the museum was... I forgot exactly what it was called, but it was the first of the deluxe edition. And basically, you're part of a class. You went to the museum. You stayed behind because you were enamored by an exhibit of some kind. But then you are locked into the museum, and this computer virus takes over the whole museum and wants you dead.
Yay!
And you're assisted along the way by this mysterious computer program that's not the virus, that's helping you out along the way every now and then. But that one was phenomenal because that was the first use of the items. And that's why I really remember it. But there was a lot of great scenes. Like, for instance, there's a scene you're on the aeronautics level where they have like space and flying, and that was like a dead giveaway that right off the bat, like if you chose incorrectly which path you would take first, you were dead, because the book flat out stated there's only one correct path to go through the entire book. Because normally in the Choose Yourself Goosebumps books, whatever, the Choose Yourself ones, like those the two main storylines in the books, they had some good, there's like one good ending in each, a few like all right endings, like maybe you're a zombie now or maybe you're a mummy or whatever, and then a lot where you're just flat out dead or in hell basically. This one, the museum one, was straight up there's one correct path. So if you didn't choose a certain exhibit to go to first and went to another one later, you were probably dead, because I remember when I chose the flying exhibit first, there was a part where you're looking around and then one of the huge bee models just takes off, which is super terrifying, and then just goes at you. And if you didn't have the tennis racket or whatever it was, you're dead. Another great...
Right, impaled, or are you just allergic to giant bee stings?
I think you're allergic, like, which is just horrifying. Well, not me personally, but, like, the character in the book is. And then another fantastic scene, and it was, like, Chekhov's gun. You're in the... I think it's, like, the biology level,
mm-hmm.
and you see this, like a mannequin
mm-hmm.
of a guy, the see-through man, like you see the guts, the brain, the
yes.
eyes, and it always says like, oh, and there's the see-through man as usual. And once you get done with the whole level, then the see-through man comes after you. And the book takes great pains to mention how it's squishing through, and it's super terrifying to
yeah.
me. And of course, there's a part where a T-Rex skeleton comes to life. And there's actually a moment, too, where if you have collected too many items that can work against you, you would have to roll a die or flip a coin, and whatever die you roll, how many of that number of items you lose.
Hmm.
And you have to choose the items you have to get rid of. So it almost plays out like a board game, the more
yeah.
I think about it. And like I said...
You could totally do a Goosebumps edition of Hill House.
Yeah, not Betrayal on House and Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And play out a lot the same way, just a lot more absurd, but no less scary, I think.
Yeah. It was great. I remember, and like I said, there was only one good ending, and I think it ended with you being in a video game, and it was freaking awesome or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the other endings were like total, like, you're dead or in hell, basically.
You're dead, or you wish you were.
You wish you were dead. Those are the main ones off the top of my head that really stood out to me.
For kids.
Yeah, for kids, yeah. And judging by the time, I should... I'm going to horror this up a little bit. But one of the reasons why I think it wasn't as popular as it could have been is that... It came well after the huge craze of the Goosebumps, and so it's not as well recognized by the community,
mm-hmm.
I guess. And it doesn't... I think the more I think about it, I think it also is lack... Because these are choose-your-own-adventures, and you have the two main storylines and things like that, there's not, like, a central antagonist in the books, for the most part.
Oh, yeah, that's important.
Like...
Because that is the main character.
Yeah, we all remember Slappy, for instance. Yeah, or
nobody cares about the protagonist.
Monster Blood. Things like that. I mean, the Choose Your Own Adventures, they have a lot more...
Character?
There's a lot more, like, enemy antagonists and side characters. And really, the whole antagonist is the world itself out against you, in a way. And you can't really market that too well, I would assume.
Probably not.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else related to that. But yeah, I was really a big fan of that, of the series. And even though they were, probably, like I said, probably still below my age, maybe a little bit when I got them, I would still buy them.
Nothing's below our age.
Yeah, I would still buy them throughout being a teenager because they were a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun going through them and seeing the storyline and being creeped out. What's up, Mary?
It's really funny to me that your mom got rid of your D&D stuff and not these.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
Because Goosebumps actually is really horrifying.
Yeah, that's true.
And I'm surprised there was not more of a moral panic over it. I mean, maybe I missed it.
I think we kind of...
got over moral panics at that point. Why?
I think we did witness it, but it was such a...
The thing is, since it was mostly literature, people would not take it as seriously.
Like, oh,
I don't know.
When you compare it at the same time to, like, Mortal Kombat or...
Yeah. I mean, we got moral panic over Harry Potter, and that's not having kids dying all the damn time. Just a few kids.
I'm trying to think. I should have looked it up if there was anything else off the top of my head that was a lot of fun. But those are the main ones that really stood out to me. And like I said, it's a fun series. I think even now I would sometimes go back and just read through them again just for like a quick little, you know, just like fun
okay.
50 minutes or whatever.
I got one. Was there a train one?
Is there a train one? Oh, probably. There was a lot of ones.
I got haunted houses, mad science, haunted museum. Well, not haunted.
There's a haunted carnival.
Yeah. That is like the perfect setting for Choose Your Own Adventure because there's so many routes a haunted carnival could take. I love haunted carnivals. Everybody read Something Wicked This Way Comes by Ray Bradbury.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We might come back to Choose Your Own Goosebumps later.
As a Halloween special.
As a Halloween special and look at other stories. For now, that's basically my thing for my nostalgia.
Cool. A lot of fun. More interactive than I really expected. Like, I know that's kind of the point, but, like, the items and the eternal loop and the...
The dice and the coins. Yeah.
Is there one that's just like, rip this page out, you can't use it ever again?
Oh, shit. No, I don't think so. I don't think I could ever do that, even.
You know what I always wanted to do? In fact, I think somebody already did it. I don't remember if it was Give Yourself Goosebumps, though, but basically have a page that you can't actually get to
and
do the choosing.
I do know which one you're talking about, and that was from the original Choose Your Own Adventure series.
Uh-huh.
I forgot what the premise was, but it's something like you're finding Utopia or whatever.
Was that a D&D one?
No, this was an actual one, and like the only way you could get to Utopia was just finding the random page in the book that because Utopia doesn't exist, so you can't act. There's not an actual page that turns to it. You have to cheat to get to it.
That's meta.
And you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the Choose Your Own Goosebumps did that.
Yes.
I wouldn't.
Pretty sneaky by the sound of it.
I wouldn't know how you would know.
Well, you just flip through it like a book.
You would, but like, here's the thing is that if I saw that Utopia ending and didn't even realize it didn't exist, I would assume like you would have to turn a page to it. You would have to find all the endings and then
account for all of them.
And then account for all the page turners, which would take. Even though these books aren't big, that would take a little while to do so. And then you have to do it for every single Choose Your Own Goosebumps. Like, I mean, it sounds like a quote-unquote fun thing or an interesting thing to do. I could see it go either way. Like, there would be a surprise ending or there wouldn't be.
A hidden ending. I also want to say Twilight Zone Choose Your Own Adventure would be amazing.
Oh,
I'd probably
God.
Try to convince you that you were actually the one in the book and the book was real.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Ooh. Now you are part of the storyline. That's funny.
The book. As you read the book reads you.
Ooh. So I think that'll do it for our nostalgia episode. We might do another one or... I don't know. We'll just see how we're feeling.
I just really wanted to talk about that video game.
Yeah. It gave me a chance to talk about Choose Your Own Goosebumps, which I never do. But that was pretty nice, in all honesty. So, a little few things before we close out this episode. We haven't done it yet, but we're probably going to switch the podcasting feed over to WordPress. Because I didn't realize... My fault. I didn't realize at the time that SoundCloud you'd have to have a paid subscription for, and it's unfortunately not really part of my budget right now at this time. But I already have an account, paid account with WordPress, so I want to see if we can host it over there instead. So bear with us if there's any sort of technical hiccups at this time. We're also going to return to Teen Titans Season 2, of course. Probably not in the next episode. And we'll focus on the first three episodes of it. And I believe we'll get to see Tara as well.
Oh no.
Oh yeah. beyond that, I hope you enjoyed this episode, this very different episode, which is good because we don't want to be just a Teen Titans podcast.
And there are quite a few seasons of Teen Titans to go through before
there
we
are.
Get on to the next thing.
Yeah, one thing I'm hoping to do is we can talk about either Golf Story or Octopath Traveler, which we've been playing a lot lately. But we'll see how it goes. Until then, enjoy your day.
Don't be ashamed to be a geek.
Yeah, and recover any
But
lost...
also don't be too proud because it's not that big a deal.
Yeah. And don't be afraid to go looking through book sales.
Or watching Let's Plays,
or... or watching Let's Plays. Okay, bye.
Goosebumps. Viewer beware, you're in for a scare.